Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadi Tamastu Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, page 34. Pratigya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.28. O Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka, and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. From the purport. Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, one cannot tolerate separation from him. Why is this so? Because we are all eternally related with him as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus the sun rays and the sun cannot be separated. The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial, and as soon as the cloud is cleared, the sun rays again display their natural effulgence in the presence of the sun. Similarly, the living entities who are molecular parts of the whole spirit are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, the illusory energy. This illusory energy, or the curtain of Maya, has to be removed. And when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. The solution is given here, and it rests on us, and it rests on us to assimilate it or not. So, its whole point is that the attraction to the Lord, that's the actual essential point, right? This attraction, then, Prabhupada points out that that's what will give pure unalloyed devotional service, right? Or pure devotional service is that attraction to the Lord. That's what's going to move it forward. Right? By our attraction means then there'll be that attachment. There's attachment, and then there's endeavor. Right? So the attraction doesn't arise. So how does attraction arise? Right? Prajumna comes about because of? Or before? Sankarshan. Right? Because we have the knowledge. Then from that knowledge, then we get that attraction. Because then you can see how it works, why it works. Right? You do this, you get this result. All these different aspects are there. If you're going to do that, you have to do that without the I got a camera energy. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Does that make sense? So if I don't notice, you're doing okay. If I notice, you're doing a bad job. That's the simple formula. Okay? Yes?
Prajumna comes from Vasudeva, meaning the attraction comes from?
We have Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha. Right? And then there's endeavor, our pastimes, Vasudeva. We understand Vasudeva is the origin because he has all the six qualities. And then from him's expanding Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, because with those in place, then you can have pastimes. Right? If you have a place, you have attraction, you have need, then you'll endeavor. Right? So if thinking and feeling are there, willing will happen. Right, so within thinking, then you have the two aspects, the more intellectual side and then the more emotional. Does that make sense? So when both of those are together, then it works really nicely. Does that make sense? Okay. So we see here is that it's continuing on this, but now all the detail, that's going to be in Mahabharata. Right? The detail of who's what, who's on the roof, who's doing all the different things. All those things are in Mahabharata. But now what was left out of Mahabharata, what wasn't brought out in Mahabharata?
Pure devotional service.
Pure devotional service. So now that part that's missing, that's what's added. Right? You don't have to add more or something else. It's just what was missing. You know, just like in the commentaries. You have the verses. Then to illuminate that, then there's the commentary. Then you have that notes and other commentaries on the commentaries. Right? So they just bring out more and more aspects. Right? Does that make sense? They're not changing the topic. So then... Yeah. So here the difficulty comes up is because of this separation. The living entities then being... You know, like this, like the particles of sun rays. When the cloud of illusion is there, you don't see the connection. Right? It's not that they're not connected. When there's clouds, there's still light, but you don't make the connection. You understand? But it's not that the sun becomes covered. We say the sun is covered by clouds. No, our vision of the sun is covered by clouds. The sun's never covered by clouds. Right? That's the whole point. Because when the sun comes up, the clouds go away. Right? The fog and the mist goes away. Like that. So this thing is interesting also, Prabhupada, saying in the purport that the... Because generally we hear eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's the standard. But in this purport he says eating, shelter, mating, and defending. Right? Because where do you sleep? Where your shelter is. Right? You know, where you feel shelter, that's where you sleep. You understand? So sleeping's a lot bigger than just, you know what I'm saying? In other words, your house is connected to sleeping.
But also to eating, mating, and defending.
Yeah, of course. But the point is you can't eat out in the street, but you won't sleep out in the street. You know? So then that element... That then brings up that need of shelter is the thing. But then fearing becomes the main. Because fearing means you're worried about the problems that will come up due to the other three. Right? Problems in eating, problems in shelter, problems in mating. The fear of that's what drives. That make sense? So that's also very interesting. You know, okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 11th chapter, Krishna arrived at Dwarka, is praised by the inhabitants. He then meets with his friends and satisfies his wives. After departing Hastinapur, Sri Krishna journeys with his royal entourage to his own capital, Dwarka. The citizens gather before the Lord to offer prayers. So on his, as we saw before, is that when he's going, he's in no rush. Because it's about pastors. There's not something to do, because something to do was in Hastinapur. You had the Kurukshetra war, then working all this out with Yudhishthira, getting him established on the throne. So now Krishna's work technically is done. Right? Coming, establishing, removing the miscreants, establishing the righteousness. So the only thing left is his primary element of interacting with the devotees. So on his way back, he's going, and as he goes to the kingdoms, they'll invite him, he'll go to the kingdom, you know, stay for a few days and continue and like that. So, you know, and this way he'll makes it finally back to Dwarka. The citizens gather before the Lord to offer prayers. The Lord accepts their offerings. Krishna enters the city, greets more citizens, and exchanges affection with his mothers. Finally, the Lord enters into each of his 16,108 palaces and sees each of his queens. The transcendental character of the Lord and the spiritual nature of Krishna's relationship with his queens are described. Shloka and Sharma, summary of the verses. Verses 1 to 29, Lord Krishna enters Dwarka. Verses 30 to 39, Lord Krishna is greeted by his queens. Verses 1 to 29, Lord Krishna enters Dwarka. In this section, Suta Goswami describes how Sri Krishna, entering his own capital, is greeted by the citizens. The Lord accepts their offerings and exchanges affection with his mothers. Śrīta Goswāmī said, upon reaching the border of his most prosperous metropolis, known as the country of the Anartas, Dwarka, the Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. So here, because it's based on having interaction, then you want it to be known that you've arrived. Right? It's when you don't want any interaction, that's when you try to just kind of like slip in and, you know, and then people kind of find out later. You understand? So for the Lord, it is about rasa, so it's not a problem that he comes, arrival is announced, so then the devotees can prepare, come out, see, interact, everybody can be there. Does that make sense?
It appears that for Krishna, it's not a problem to deal with secondary and you know, primal thing, but then for us, in order to, you know, to fix the secondary things, we never arrive to the point of interaction, because it is action.
Primary. Or if we deal with the primary, then we think we don't have to worry about the secondary.
Yeah. So then how can we balance those two?
If you have, means if you have the knowledge, right, for Shankarshan, and the interest in that, then by contemplating that, then we'll see the importance of it. So then that activity will start. Then that activity will require practice. Right? So that's mananas, that having gone through the others, you've contemplated, so you've brought yourself to the point of practice. Then when you make the endeavor, then however goes smoothly, goes smoothly. Whatever doesn't, then you'll contemplate it again, and then again apply it. And it'll go back and forth for some time until it runs very, very smoothly. Then that balance will be there. With that balance coming, because that's been by thought and endeavor, that's generally where we find then realization comes. Then it becomes very clear and easy, because then you see in that way. Because before, you're seeing through the eyes of Shastra, But it's that first level is that you have the understanding that it should be done this way. So you're seeing through the eyes of Shastra, but by that practice and you see how it works, you realize then your vision is actually according to that. You don't see another thing and then say, no, Shastra says I should see like this. You just see it according to how the Shastra says. Does that make sense? So it'll come with time. So then that balance comes very easy, because then you see everything. You know, it's just like anybody who's expert in any field, they can see all the elements, and they can see what each element does, their relationship, what results they get. So as they're applying it, then let's say one element takes it more to the right, one element takes it more to the left. So as they're going, because they see the goal, right? Then as they're going, they apply the one element, and then as it goes too far, they apply the element, so they get, you know, that balance, and then it reaches what. But that's because they can see all that. So that's why that focus on Shastra Chakshu, seeing according to Shastra. So whether we're seeing intellectually or seeing because it's been accepted, you know, by the mind, it's become part of values, then it doesn't matter. One will turn into the other. Right? And if that's continued, then that will bring about, you know, if it's done to please the Lord, that will bring about devotional service. If it's done without trying to please the Lord, or temporarily trying to please, you know, in other words, if you please the Lord, you'll be happy. You'll get the skill and you get that balance. As we see, that there's lots of pious people, and they live a quite balanced lifestyle, and their endeavors are quite balanced and all that. But because it's not Krishna conscious, it will be lost, because all they did was cultivate the practice in the conditioned nature. You know, so that's like investing in someone else's property and then losing it. You know, it's not so intelligent. But that same investment you can get. It's like the difference between renting a house and then paying a mortgage. It's going to be the same amount of money, but in one you own it, you know, and the other one you'll never own it. So it will always be lost. So that's the difference. We're not saying you're going to pay money every month, but the point is one gives you bhakti, while the other one, whatever your endeavor, it'll be lost, you know. So then, yes, you built a nice house, it's fabulous and everything, you know, for all the nice, you know, human arrangements, and then the next life you're the cat in that house, you know, and then the next life you're the flea on the cat in the house, you know, so, you know, it's just, you know, so you just want to avoid all that. You know?
That's the shelter for the flea.
Yeah, the shelter for the flea. Yes. Yes.
Is it enough for, like, someone that's approached the devotional process and taken that on? Is that enough, or do they have to be constantly conscious that I'm doing this for Krishna, like I'm, you know, trying to develop the mindset?
Why wouldn't you be?
I'm just saying, like, I'm just asking if that's enough, just to say at the beginning.
But enough for what?
To develop.
That's there, but the point of us seeing through the eyes of Shastra is to develop that love for Krishna, and that comes by always being absorbed in him in samadhi. So it requires constant remembrance. Because otherwise, if you're not remembering that, what are you remembering?
Yeah.
You understand? That was the interesting thing the other day. We were thinking about it. You know what it was said about, instead of greed, it had sinful desires, right? And then that was gotten rid of by stopping, making plans and daydreaming, right? You know. So then I was thinking, is that the principle is the same? Let's say you're doing an activity, you know, you're doing, let's say, some deity worship. Okay. Now, what are you supposed to be doing?
Worship the Lord.
And then where should your thought process be? On the Lord. If it's not on the Lord, it won't be satisfying. Right? It's on something else. So in the same way is that you get rid of this bad quality by not thinking of something else. Right? So therefore it says daydreaming and making plans. Right? Where we're saying, well, what does that got to do with greed? But the point is greed means thinking beyond what you're supposed to be dealing with. Right? It means you're supposed to be focused on just doing the activity that gets that result, not on what else I could do or how much more I could do to get that result, get more of a result. You understand? So in other words, in relationship, you're not focused on the interaction. So that's why it's not considered proper. Right? Because if you're daydreaming, you're doing one thing, thinking of something else. Right? So that's the point, is if this is understood, then one stops, tries to catch that. Otherwise we'll think, oh yes, being greedy is bad. So when we come to the point where we have something, we want more, then we'll think about greed. But it's already too late. You have to stop greed when the mind wanders into something else. That's where you're going. Because why is that? I'm doing one thing, I'm thinking of something else. That's greed.
Oh.
You understand? I'm doing one thing, but I want more. I want to do this and think of that and get that.
Yeah.
Very subtle. That's where it starts from. That's why it's so hard to deal with it at the time. So these subtleties are then how you catch it. You can see it coming. It's just like, I heard that the... is it Watusi? Watusi keep the cows?
Masai.
Masai, yeah. Thank you. The Maasai, they keep cows, and their idea is that God is the one who has the most cows, right? You know, I mean, they got some things right. Some parts they're really off on, but whatever it is, this part is okay. So they're so tuned into the cows. The cows are so much part of their culture that they can tell 6 weeks before the cow gets actually sick that it's going to get that sickness. So 6 weeks before, they start to treat the cow so it doesn't get sick. So that's the idea. That's what we find that the acharyas are giving, is how to deal with it before it actually, you know, turns into, you know, a monster. Right? Like that. So just when the mind wanders, because that's what he said, when the mind wanders, bring it back. Because when it wanders, then it's a thousand branch. What does a thousand branch mean? You want everything. What's that? Greed. Is that what it is? Yeah. So that... Yeah.
Is it okay to allow the mind to wander, like naturally wandering towards the topics of Krishna consciousness and Krishna, or?
But that's not wandering. Wandering is just kind of, you know, there's no point to it. You know what I'm saying? You know, every day, you know, you walk in your straight lines to your places, getting you do everything like that. So then it's just you go out in the park and just wander. That's why in parks you don't have straight paths. You know, unless it's one of those kind of boulevards with the trees and the seats. But otherwise, it's just kind of meandering paths. So you can just relax. You don't have to get anywhere. You know what I'm saying? But because the point is that's not wandering. Thinking of Krishna is what you're supposed to be doing. Wandering is when it goes somewhere else.
Yeah, but if it's if I'm in that state of allowing.
Sometimes my mother always said, "No, yeah, buts."
Is the difference between me actually consciously telling my mind to think of Krishna or allowing it to think of it?
No, but allowing it means then you have a choice.
Yeah, but the thing is, it may wander.
Another yeah, but. Just say yes.
Yes, it wanders in and out.
Yes.
That's not, no, but that's wandering out. In is, that is what it's supposed to be doing.
That I have to be conscious to make sure that it's always there.
That's what we're trying to do. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Right? Yeah. Because if you have that, you have everything else. So thinking of Krishna, what it's supposed to do, thinking of other things not related to Krishna, that's what it's not supposed to do. That's wandering. Because wandering means you're not getting anything done. So if you're not thinking of Krishna, you're not getting anything done. You're thinking of Krishna, that's not wandering.
Except it's a fluid process. It's not like...
No one said it's not fluid. The point is the fluidity. That's why we had... Kunti's prayers. Kunti's prayers is, may my mind, like the Ganga, just flow into the ocean. It doesn't go anywhere else. It's not that the Ganga gets down here to Jalanga and says, ooh, check that out. And then you understand? It just keeps going.
Well, for example, I'll be thinking of like Krishna's form and then from...
No, see, it's not a matter of that it's happening. See, the discussion is not that it happens. The discussion is about whether it's correct or not. What is the standard? Then you take that and apply it. So unless it's a question that is an application, we don't need to discuss the environment of it. In other words, what you have to see is there's the intellectual discussion of a topic and there's the emotional or the mental. The mental is... you're getting an experience, and that experience is coming from that environment. So it is thought, unless the whole environment, every detail is discussed, you won't get the flavor. But we're not here to experience what you're experiencing. Otherwise, it means if that was the case, we wouldn't be sitting like this. We'd be sitting in a circle. You know, and then we say, you know, yeah, holding hands, and you have the guitar, you know, okay, and so introduce yourself, hi, I'm this, you know, and everybody goes, hello, this, you know, and then you understand. So if you see the form like that, then you use that method. If not, then intelligence means what exactly is the problem. You understand? So that's what we have to get to. We don't need the whole background, because everybody's got background.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, and if we want to get fun, you know, yeah, you know, I was doing an regression the other day, and then in the last life, you know, you can just keep going and going and going. So, does that make sense? So in other words, you have to switch into this intellectual mode. It doesn't mean it's not applied in the mind, but you have to see what we're dealing with. Otherwise, we'll always go all over the place. That's the advantage of this kind of study, is that you can go straight through. So Manda Abhideya Prayojana. You don't always have to go through the whole rigmarole of the mind. Right? So, in other words, yes, it wanders like this, you know, but then the thing is how does it wander, you know, how tight are the wanderings, or some are tight and then it's longer, and then sometimes it's a straight line, but then sometimes it's obtuse, you know, so is obtuse better than, you know, the other angle, you know, that is not what we're talking about. It's about you're conscious of Krishna, that's what you want. Not conscious of Krishna, that's not what you want. So all you have to do is analyze what's going on according to that. If it's thinking about Krishna, that's good. Whether it's meandering, whether it's running, whether it's skipping, it doesn't matter. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what you want. But anything else is not what you want. That's what we're talking about. Does that make sense? It's not that... Okay, that's okay. That's Monday, but on Tuesday, then you know, is the Mandarin? You know, no. It's just that's a principle. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. The Lord sounded his auspicious conch shell, heralding his arrival and apparently pacifying the dejection of the inhabitants. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that without seeing Krishna directly, the lamentation of the citizens of Dwarka could not be completely dissipated, therefore apparently pacifying. Now, they're happy because he's come, but until they see, then that's okay. Thus the word Eva seemingly is used, Srila Prabhupada writes. The inhabitants of the city of Dwarka were in a mood of dejection and expected the arrival of the Lord at any moment. So the heralding sound of the auspicious conch shell was very encouraging, and apparently the sound pacified their dejection. They were still more aspirant to see the Lord amongst themselves, and all of them became alert to receive him in the befitting manner. These are the signs of spontaneous love of Godhead. Just as the gopis at Vrindavan used to think of Krishna while he's away from the village for cowherding engagements, the citizens of Dwarka were all immersed in the thought of the Lord while he's away from Dwarka to attend the battle of Kurukshetra. So here, spontaneous means it just naturally is attracted. That's the point. So one wants that to be constant, right? So in other words, if it's constant, great. If it's not, if it goes somewhere else, then you have to catch it and bring it back. The pure white conch seemed reddened by the touch of Krishna's lips, so that it appeared like a white swan playing in the stems of red lotuses. Srila Prabhupada reveals the spiritual significance of the redness of the white conch shell due to the lip touch of the Lord. The Lord is all spirit, and matter is ignorance of this spiritual existence. Factually, there is nothing like matter in spiritual enlightenment. And this spiritual enlightenment takes place at once by the contact of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. The Lord is present in every particle of all existence, and he can manifest his presence from anything and everywhere by the spiritual enlightenment of the devotee. So I mean, you can see him anywhere. It's not that the situation is the point. That's our point. It's not about the situation. Because of this situation, I couldn't think of Krishna. He's in every atom, between every atom. So in every situation, we can think of Krishna. So if we're not, that's because those situations are the ones that our mind is attracted to other than Krishna. That's why we don't think of Krishna. But it's not that the situation one couldn't think. No, our conditioning will have problem in that. But it's not the situation, it's us. Right? The situation just sits there.
By practice, the mind will be naturally attracted?
Yes,
practice?
Yes.
We will have to force.
No. By practice, it will naturally be. Because the point is why are we not? It's just like, why does sugar, which is sweet by nature, not taste sweet when you have jaundice? Is it the sugar? Is it the eating process? No, it's us. The liver is diseased. But by taking that sugar, it purifies the liver. Therefore, then the liver being strong, then the sugar tastes sweet. That's how you can tell. If you eat something sweet, it tastes bitter, you know your liver's got a problem. If you taste something sweet, it doesn't taste sweet, then it's still a problem, but it's not so bad. You know, if everybody else is freaking out, this is so sweet, and you're going, no, it's just a touch. You know, unless, of course, you're Bengali. Then that is true. Like that. But, you understand? So the point is by the process of chanting and devotional service, then one will spontaneously come to that platform. I mean, we'll come to that platform of spontaneous attraction to the Lord. You just have to follow the process. That's why it's always about the Lord, His attractiveness, His beauty, the devotee's attractiveness, because then the mind sees that this is where you can get this. You know, it's just like you hear this one thing, and we forget it. You know what I'm saying? But let's say if we say Romeo and Juliet, then what do we remember? Right? A balcony and some discussion about, you know, flowers, you know. Do you understand? So the thing, why? Because that will give rise, that's the possibility of material happiness. But even though we come across hundreds and thousands of, you know, more attractive, wonderful things than this, still we forget them because we don't think this is going to make us happy. So it's just a matter of constantly being in touch with it. Then that jaundice of material life will go away. And then we'll be able to appreciate it. Right? Because it's natural. That's why Prabhupada always uses the term natural. It's not a forced thing. You know, it's not an imposition on the mind. It's naturally what the mind does. Because the mind goes to something that's going to make you happy. That's what the mind does. So the mind makes, if you have an understanding that Krishna consciousness will make you happy, then that's where it'll go. So it just goes other places because it thinks, you know, those will make us happy. No, we're in Krishna consciousness because we think, yes, that will make us happy, but that's a touch more intellectual, right? And then the other things, then the mind is, you know.
By habit?
Yes, it's by habit. Just because we've done it, and, you know, there's supposedly been some taste, and then, you know, you're continuing trying to find that taste. Yes.
It seems that Krishna likes to announce himself before appearance and then intensify the emotions of all the devotees by blowing the conch or blowing the flute, and it's like the whole rasa is...
Well, it's there because the rasa will be better. Because if someone knows you're there, then they will deal appropriately. You know, you see, it's a standard thing. Just like, you know, in the cultured households, the men, before they enter a room, if they know women are there, they'll always make a sound, a cough or something. Like that, clear the throat. Always. Because then the women will know that God, so then they'll present themselves how they would like them to be selves to be seen. Yeah. You understand? Yeah. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So this idea is that you get more by just walking in. No, you get less. Because then they're not in the mood to interact. In fact, as you walked in, they'll get upset, and then it gets even worse. You know, at least then if you cough and they don't want you to come in, they'll say, we're busy now, or, you know, like that. You know, so something so you'll avoid the... that makes sense? So it's a standard principle. So Krishna here, he blows, you know, it's a city, so he blows a conch shell. But, you know, if he's in the palace, then he'll do these other things. Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay, as by the spiritual enlightenment of the devotee. In other words, he's in everything, as we discussed before with Prahlad Maharaj, is that the Lord's in everything, but he's only going to manifest there in his personal feature if you're conscious of him personally. Otherwise, he pervades everything as Brahman and Paramatma. Right? But as soon as you think of him like that, like Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu is saying, is he in this pillar? So he's just thinking of supreme and that kind of thing like that. He's not necessarily thinking of the personal aspect, and there's no affection. But Prahlad Maharaj says yes. So he's thinking of the person. So the Lord manifests personally from the pillar because of Prahlad Maharaj, his vision, not with Hiranyakashipu. Because it's a fact, he is in the pillar. But then he'll personally come out of the pillar. That's because that's how Prahlad Maharaj says. Otherwise, he reserves the right of not being exposed to anyone and everyone. by ardent love and devotional service to the Lord, or in other words, by spiritual contact with the Lord, everything becomes spiritually reddened like the conch shell in the grip of the Lord. And the Paramahamsa, or the supremely intelligent person, plays the part of the ducking swan in the water of spiritual bliss, eternally decorated by the lotus flower of the Lord's feet. Somehow when I first read it, somehow I was getting this thing, what is it? How it means, how does the you know, the duck and the swan, oh, ducking swan. Okay, yeah. Okay, because the swans, they're in the water of spiritual bliss, okay? They like to entangle their necks in the lotus flowers. For them, that's the stems under the water. For them, that's fun. So then that's compared to the lotus feet of the Lord. So in this ocean of, or in this water of spiritual bliss, to become absorbed in the Lord's lotus feet, this is what the Paramahamsas do, right? And this is that quote I was mentioning yesterday. Supremely intelligent persons. So it's not intelligent, supremely intelligent. Brahman's intelligent. Paramahamsa is supremely intelligent. Does that make sense? So when we say Paramahamsa, that means always absorbed in the Lord. So this is the context when the Shastra mentions less intelligent. Does this make sense? It's because of the absorption in the mundane. Does that make sense? Women, children, friends of the twice born, shudras, they're so much easier to be absorbed in the material surrounding. Like that. The rasa that comes from it. That's what's less intelligence. It's not talking about the amount of brains. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yes.
Right? So, it's not that. Like, you know, the men are all getting married and they're all complaining about it. Right? But they're still all getting married. Right?
Means they're less intelligent.
So, yeah. So who's smart here? Do you understand? So the point is more intelligent and less intelligent is based on how much you're interested in seeing everything in connection to Krishna. That's the point. That's why someone with, when you say a dvija bandhu, we don't mean an idiot. A dvija bandhu, you know, especially if they're a brahma bandhu, they're very intelligent. You know, Ashwatthama was compared to a brahma bandhu. Now, here's someone who can operate a brahmastra. It means very few people can do that. So that technique, that skill, that power, you know, the material, what do you call it, necessities required. He had them. So that's, we're not talking about that kind of intelligence. That is up to the individual according to the karma. They'll be very intelligent or not. What we're talking about here is remembering Krishna. So the point is, you're remembering Krishna, then you're the most intelligent. You're not remembering Krishna, then you're less intelligent. Does that make sense? So if we think of a, you know, demographic group who loves to gossip, talk about, you know, things going on in people's lives and families and everything like that, and you can keep yourself busy for hours with that. Who does that? The ladies like to do that, right? You understand? So that's what it's talking about is less intelligent, because you spend the time doing that. But if one is absorbed in Krishna, like Kunti, then she is topmost. She is the supremely intelligent person. So it's just saying that's the natural default. But then it's, yes, we're not the body, so yes. So what is the soul doing about it? Not that the body's doing something else. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. It's that, is one then using the intelligence to serve Krishna? Then that's supreme intelligence. Otherwise, why is Kunti's prayers there, or Uttara's prayers, or so much focus on the ladies on the roof of the palace? You know what I'm saying? So in here, we see as far as prayers go, you know, they're equally represented. So this is supremely intelligent. But if one's not doing that, then the tendency, because the point is men can intellectualize, they can do that all day. So it's not going into rasa. So it doesn't go that deep. Right? That's why sometimes the ladies will feel the men are superficial. Right? But the point is, the women, it has to be, there has to be a rasa, there has to be an experience. So it's either going to be spiritual or material. So protected means you create an environment that's always spiritual. Then one will try to taste that environment, one's always getting spiritual taste. Does that make sense? That's the meaning of protection. Yes? No? Okay.
Wives?
Yes.
We see like liberated soul, they hear one time. They hear something one time and then just accept, apply, or realize,
yes.
Like
yes.
That. Then conditioned soul, then after many, 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 many times of hearing, then it's not because there's thick layer, you know?
So yes, because there's conditioning.
Mm.
See, the liberated soul, there's no conditioning to block. Mm. There's simply, you have to worry about if they want to try to be the controller, the enjoyer. Mm. That's the weakness that you have to watch out for from the tatastha position, because tatastha position means it's a choice.
Yeah.
So what the living entity is doing is voluntarily giving up that choice, that particular choice, and choosing devotional service, right? That will, one will only absorb oneself in the internal potency, not in the external. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You, one may say, oh, but we're losing freedom. It's just like, how many adults would stick their finger in the fire? Right? None. I mean, maybe, yeah. Not many, so. But basically speaking, but the kids, they could, right? Any kid could stick their finger in the fire. So does that mean the kids are more free? They have more facilities, more opportunities? You know, the adults are losing opportunities. You know, like that. They're not sticking their, you know, they don't have the option of sticking their finger in the fire. You understand? So that's what we're talking about. You would say, well, that's a less intelligent facility. Yes, so that's the whole point. Is that giving up the material option, that's intelligent. Keeping it, that's less intelligent. Does that make sense?
So, Maris, I was wondering then, what is it, because we heard sincerity is how the speed of the process means that...
Sincerity, yes. But then you also, there's also the element of how much there is to go.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that means, why are they on the liberated platform? They've already purified themselves. You know, so if one is on the tribal platform, then, you know, there's a little bit more to go, right? You first have to get up to the human platform, and then from human up to Brahminical, and then Brahminical up to Vaishnava, and then like this.
But is that, that's by culture, or... By consciousness?
It means cultivating the consciousness.
Right.
Right? That's the point. We're cultivating Krishna consciousness.
Mm.
That will take care of everything else.
And then what we can do to slow it down?
Oh, that's plenty to do.
It means when we are sitting here.
How much time do you got?
When we are sitting here and hearing, or so-called hearing, then what?
That's the so-called hearing that'll slow it down, the hearing that'll speed it up.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
You know, it's just like you have that little thing on the floor, you push it, you go faster, you don't push it, you go slower.
Okay.
Having long endured the transcendental pain of separation from Krishna, when the citizens of Dwarka heard the transcendental sound of the Lord's Shankha, they rushed quickly out the city gates to have a long-awaited darshan of the Lord. Verse 3. Srila Prabhupada explains in his commentary that one even who is not yet pure can achieve spiritual vision and see Krishna, who is the only protector, through chanting his name and taking shelter of him. The sound heralded by Lord Krishna was something like the heralding of the sunrise in the morning. So all the citizens of Dwarka awoke from a state of slumber because of the sunrise of Krishna, and they all hastened towards him just to have an audience. The devotees of the Lord know no one else as protector. The sound of the Lord is identical with the Lord, as we have tried to explain by the non-dual position of the Lord. The mutual existence of our present status is full of fear. Out of the four problems of material existence, namely the food problem, oh here it is, the food problem, the shelter problem, the fear problem, and the mating problem. The fear problem gives us more trouble than the others. We are always fearful due to our ignorance of the next problem. The whole material existence, right? So yeah, we make a problem by worrying about the next problem. Right? The whole material existence is full of problems, and thus the fear problem is always prominent. This is due to our association with the illusory energy of the Lord, known as Maya or external energy. Yet all fear is vanquished as soon as there is the sound of the Lord, represented by his holy name, as it was sounded by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the following 16 words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can take advantage of these sounds and be free from all threatening problems of material existence. So here we see is that by taking shelter, by remembering the Lord, then that fear will go away. Because our fear is about problems, how to solve problems, right? And the problems are eating, sleeping, mating, right? So we want to solve those problems. So those go away when we take shelter of the Lord. As they came before Lord Krishna, the residents of Dwarka presented him with gifts while welcoming him in ecstatic language. Verses 4 and 5. The Lord is Atmarama, self-sufficient. There is no need for him to seek happiness from anything beyond himself. He is not in want for the worshipper's offerings because these offerings are themselves generated from his energy. Still, he accepted the gifts of his devotees because they were presented to him in pure devotional service, Srila Prabhupada explains. The comparison is made herein that offerings to the Lord is something like offering a lamp in the worship of the sun god. Anything fiery and illuminating is but an emanation of the energy of the sun. And yet, to worship the sun god, it is necessary to offer him a lamp. In the worship of the sun, there is some sort of demand made by the worshipper. But in the case of devotional service to the Lord, there is no question of demand from either side. It is all a sign of pure love and affection between the Lord and the devotee. So interesting here is that there is no demand, there is no question of demand from either side. So when there's affection, there's no demand. That means Krishna is not demanding either. The points that he's making strongly are that if you want to taste this, then you have to give up all those other things. But in that exchange, there's no demand, there's no expectation of result. Right? It's only about pleasing the Lord. Right? And the Lord is only about pleasing the devotee. So that service, that's the supreme position. Right? So that's what the Lord likes to take. Because he's God. That's just him sitting around. He can enjoy that flavor. He doesn't have to have anybody telling him he's God. It's kind of like he knows. Like I remember when, I think it was Shatadanya. Calcutta came into Prabhupada's room and, you know, offered obeisances, and then, Prabhupada, you're the greatest, you're the this, you're the that. Prabhupada just looked at him and said, I know. You know, and it's kind of like, you know, so what are you going to do about it? You know, and then it's kind of like shut the gun yesterday. Okay, so let's do some service here rather than just sit. Okay, right. So, yes. What does that mean, maintain the body alive? Because the thing is if you're thinking about not maintaining the body, then that means you're thinking of the body, not of the relationship.
Yeah.
Point is, so if you're thinking of the relationship, you don't notice the body. That's what's happening.
I'm asking more in like a death situation.
Yes, but then you're thinking of the body.
I think there was one.
This is the whole point. Start there.
Okay.
You know, but be exact.
Okay. So there's something that you read earlier that said that I'm not sure if it's in this class now, actually, but it was said that keeping the body alive is something that's exempt from this, like if it's a death, life and death situation.
We were discussing it in mono, but see, the point is how do you do your service if you don't have a body? You know, so therefore, that's why you take care of the body. You know, that's the basic principle. Yes? That's the whole thing. But it's not, see, in other words, these things are like issues. So those aren't so important. It's just a matter of you naturally do that. But if for service of Krishna, then you want to protect, and then the body's lost, that's another thing. You know, but the point is you have to balance the situation. You know. The citizen said, "O Lord, you are worshipped by all demigods like Brahma, the four sunas, and even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. O Creator of the universe, you are our Mother, Well-Wisher, Lord, Father, Spiritual Master, and Worshipable Deity. By following your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Oh, it is our good luck that we have come again, today under your protection by your presence. Although your Lordship is rarely visited, even by the denizens of heaven, how is it possible for us to look on your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances? We can now see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness." Okay.
You mentioned before about seeing the Lord personally in everywhere. Like, how does that work?
No, it means one can. The Lord is in everything. So you're only going to see him in areas of your value. That's the point. He is in everything. But where what you value, that's where you look for it. You don't have to look for him in places like let's say, if you're 6 years old, then you look under rocks and see if you can find him there, right? But if you're not, then you look in other places, right? You look according to your value. Okay.
Is it all right to say that Krishna is everywhere and everything, but he's especially present within the deity?
That's just, he's especially present in the deity because we requested him to be. That's what an installation is. Because he's already there. But we've requested that he... reciprocate our regular worship. That's what installation is. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is why the deity, the holy name, Prasad, the association of Vaishnava, the Bhagavatam? Because whether we realize this is Krishna or not, he is still manifesting his personal aspect. That's why these five are special. While other aspects that he's in a pillar, then that's only if you understand that, then you'll be able to appreciate him there. But if you don't, it's just a pillar. Not that he's not there, but you only get the benefit of a pillar. But the deity, you come before the deity, even you don't understand, you just think nice flower arrangements, then you still get benefit. You know, not as much benefit if you notice the deity. But, you know, does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned that he always manifests personal aspect. Means... what about if we hear from the lips of realized source is different from reading the book?
No, because you're hearing from realized source in the book. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Means you're reading the Shastra, then it is the Lord. But the point is what's the perspective? What's the understanding? That's why then the Acharyas give comments. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's what's important to us. That element of tradition, that's what's important. Because the Shastra, the Veda is there, but then how that Veda is understood, that then becomes for us the Acharyas. Because right? They show they understand it and they show how to apply it. So that's why, yes, so that's why the discussions or the commentaries are always the important. You know, so that's why even the Puranas are considered more important than the Veda, because those are stories of how great personalities are understanding the Veda. Right? And then the Acharyas are making comments on that. So that's the whole. Yes.
When you're chanting Hare Krishna, if you you're not connecting so nicely, but you want to be sincere and just say, well, I'm just going to keep chanting.
Right.
So is it demanding Krishna that you're just going to keep chanting?
No, because I mean, you're going from there's no demand.
Yeah.
No, it's just a matter of this is just what you're supposed to be doing anyway.
But even if you take that mood that I'm just going
to
keep.
Yeah, but who are you telling that to?
Myself.
Yes, well, and who is this self that you're telling to?
Well, I'm saying to Krishna.
Is this the adhyatmic self or the adibhautic self? Right? In other words, the adhyatmic self is telling the adibhautic self that I'm just going to do this. Does that make sense? That doesn't make sense. She doesn't go to the evening class. So good. Because in other words, the body and mind, that's what has other ideas than chanting Hare Krishna all day.
Yes.
The soul is the one who has understood that this is a good thing.
Yes.
Right? So the body really just couldn't care less. So then, because we identify with the body, therefore us who is not identifying with the body is telling us who identifies with the body that we're going to continue chanting. You know what I'm saying? Yes? Yeah. Okay. So the Prabhupada emphasizes that pure devotees surpass even the great demigods. The Lord is rarely seen by them, the demigods, but the inhabitants of Dwarka, because of their being pure devotees without any tinge of the material contamination of fruitive activities and empiric philosophical speculation, can see him face to face by the grace of the Lord. So, the grace of the Lord you can see, but that grace comes by being freed from karma and jnana. So as you're becoming free from karma and jnana by the practice of devotional service, you're getting that understanding and realization of the Lord by His grace. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, it's by the Lord's grace only you can see Him, but you have to do something to show that you want that grace, and that's the sadhana bhakti. Right? This is the original state of the living entities and can be attained by reviving our natural and constitutional state of life. Right? That was the point before. It's natural. Which is discovered by devotional service only. Nothing else can discover it. Jnanis won't come up with this. Right? They'll come up with all this elaborate, we're not, you know, the body, we're not of this world, we should get out of this world. But if you're going to make a permanent state of something that can't be permanent, it has to be, there must be something false about your conclusion. That's why anything other than devotional service, the conclusions are always false. It's not that they're not made of true elements, but how they put it together is false. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's like the kids go into the living room and make a mess, and then before you come back, they try to put it back. But you can always tell. Yes, because they don't understand. You know, what's the whole idea of the living room? It looks nice, right? You know, the aesthetic element, the practical element. The kids don't understand aesthetics and those kind of things. So that's why they can never put it back. So in the same way, the karmis and jnanis can never understand bhakti. Because of that, they can never come to the right conclusions. It just won't happen. It's not a matter of... So that's why we can boldly say, this is not an opinion, this is the truth. It's not, well, this is the Vaishnav's view. No, this is the only view. And everything else is illusory because it has to be, because they're trying to accept a temporary position as eternal. So it's already wrong. There is no other point. So, yeah. So the devotees can see the Lord, while the demigods, they can't. Right? You'll give it here. It goes on to, Prabhupada mentions that the demigods, Brahma, and that if they want to speak to the Lord, they go to Swetadvi, and on the beach they meditate upon him. They don't actually see him. And then he gives through the heart, you know, through Brahma, he gives, you know, I say, the answer. Because, you know, that's been going on. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavi. So that he gets that. But it's rare, that's why it was such a rare thing when Krishna himself personally appeared. At that time, it told them all to take birth, and then he's coming to perform his pastime. So that was a rarity. He generally doesn't come, he just sits there. You know, like that. Because they don't have that devotion. All it is the universe, things are going wrong. So what does that mean? They're so worried about the universe, or they're worried about, you know, their job and their stuff. They don't want problems, right? Because if there's problems, that means less time, you know, how you say, on the green embroidered couches, right? Yes. No? Okay. So that's the whole point, is that they get, because they, you know, they have their duties and all that. But at the same time as they get distracted by those things. So that's why they don't see. But the residents of Dwarka, it's about Krishna. Their anxiety is about not seeing Krishna. Yes.
Isn't Lord Shiva always in meditation on Sankarshan?
Yes, but he's not the one that has the problem. It's Brahma and the others. Brahma means our Brahma is a devotee. But that's just the method. But Indra, when Indra comes to Brahma, that they can't work it out. In other words, they're the managers. When the managers can't work it out, they go to the person above them. Right? So Brahma doesn't manage the universe. Indra manages it like that, because he does it day to day. So then they go to him. And if he can't answer it, then he goes to Krishna. Is that? You know, Shiva's sitting with the four sunas under a tree, and not worried about it. And then when they can't work it out, either Krishna himself will personally take care of it, or sometimes then Shiva will take care of it. The citizens continue. O lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura Vrindavan or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like millions of years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. Okay, footnote 20. Srila Bhaktivinoda's Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala includes verses 111, 7 through 9. In the 18th chapter, in the Prayojana division entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Glories of Rasa. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary 111.9, Kurun means Hastinapur, and Madhun means Vraja, not Mathura, because at that time none of his friends resided there. This is understood from the word all in the statement Tatra Yoga Prava Vena Nitva Sarva Gyanam Harihi. The Lord, by his power of yoga, brought all the inhabitants of Mathura to Dwarka. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:50-57. He sent messengers back to the gopis when he was leaving, saying, I will come back. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:39-35. And he sent Nanda back to Braja, saying, I will come to see you. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:45-23. Although it is clearly mentioned in Padma Purana and other Puranas that he did return, it can be understood from this verse of Bhagavatam as well. When you leave, a moment becomes like a trillion years for us who belong to you. Yeah, because he hears that, because Mathura became, the residents of Mathura there who went to Dwarka. Right, so there won't be anybody in Mathura as such that the Lord is interacting with. It'll all be in Vrindavan. The inhabitants of Dwarka concluded their prayers. O Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish. Whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. In our clouded material consciousness, we take the mundane world and relations as real and important, and our rare moments of spiritual illumination as exotic and unusual experiences. Srila Prabhupada's purport in this verse explains that the real position of the soul is just the opposite. Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, one cannot tolerate separation from him. Why is this so? Because we are all eternally related with him as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus, the solar rays and sun cannot be separated. The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial, and as soon as the cloud is cleared, the sun rays again display their natural effulgence. Right? So in other words, sun rays are still there, but their natural effulgence is not. Right? Does that make sense? There's a cloud, it's still light, that means the sun rays are there, but because of the covering of the cloud, they don't display their natural effulgence. When the sun comes out again, then they do. So the soul in connection with the Lord then has that natural effulgence. When they become covered by illusion, then they don't have that. Right? It means there's something there. You can always tell that the living entity is present. Similarly, the living entities who are molecular parts of the whole spirit are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, illusory energy. This illusory energy, or the curtain of Maya, has to be removed. And when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Because right? Miseries are all coming up from not being connected to Krishna. Right? It's not that, oh, if we adjust the situation, then I won't have any miseries. No, it's not being connected to Krishna. That's what causes the miseries. Right? So that's why you can never actually make a nice situation in the material world. You try, but it doesn't really work. The next five verses, 11 through 15, describe the beauty of Krishna's capital. In truth, there had never been any question of danger to Dwarka's citizens, even while Sri Krishna was personally absent from the throne. Just as the underworld capital of Nagaloka, named Bhogavati, is protected by fearsome celestial serpents, Dwarka was similarly protected by famous warriors like Bhoja, Madhu, Arha, Kukura, Andaka, and other fierce yet noble Kshatriyas who are as strong as Lord Krishna himself. Footnote 21. Right, so all these persons are the heads of the particular lines. So they're all citizens of Dwarka. But sometimes you hear, you know, them talk about Bhoja or Andaka or Vrishni like this, like Akrura. He's the head of the Vrishni line, right? So it means, so you have all of them are there, they're in these groups. Right? So footnote. That the capital of Nagaloka is located below the earth's surface, where it is ever immersed in subterranean darkness, yet is a prosperous metropolis illuminated by the brilliant jewels that naturally adorn the heads of ferocious celestial serpents called Nagas, is explained in the purport to 1.11.11. Does this continue? No. It just says it. Year-round, Dwarka's city was blessed by the opulence of all seasons simultaneously. It was the site of countless hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and ponds from which lovely lotuses bloomed. Remember, this is a metropolis. So this is an urban environment, but it's got hermitages inside. So that means that forest setting, right? That kind of thing. Orchards are inside, right? Outside is the farmland, the orchards are inside. Flower gardens, parks, ponds, right? Which lovely lotuses bloom. They weren't growing spirulina.
Right? Spirulina follows natural. Huh? It's on the surface.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the streets were lined with fruit trees?
Yes, that's there, but also you may have areas where there's just more trees because there's parks. right? So there's always going to be fruits and flowers and how they're set up. In other words, the idea that the space, you could use the space to sell that and make money. But the point is there's more to human life than money. You know, you need money, but you also need space. You need beauty. You need all these things. Prabhupada will explain.
The ether? Ether for
yes, you also. Need the ether. Like that. That makes sense. In every residential doorway, auspicious articles such as yogurt, fruit, sugarcane, incense, lamps, and full pots of water were placed. And fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn here and there over the ground. 11:15, Srila Prabhupada writes, perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. As we find herewith in the description of its opulence, Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There's no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are the necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there, even in the heart of modern civilized man. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there is such natural, beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water. But they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens, right? And then the common man thinks that that's normal. You understand? But otherwise, those who are actually, you know, organizing it, they know it's not. You know, but if you're foolish enough to live there, hey, you know, there's a sucker born every minute, right? So therefore, go for it. You know what I'm saying? Because it mentioned that the common person is supporting the lifestyle of a few. Right, that's how the modern works. So in the Vedic, you see the opulence. It says every doorway. Mm-hmm. Right, so all these gardens, everything is there. It's part of the city, so everybody gets the benefit. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water, with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers, and cows giving sufficient milk and butter, are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. But it says it's essential. You don't have it. That's why it's so hard. On certain levels, you can see as, okay, the city folks, then they have, you know, kind of a more sharp intelligence on one level, like that. But it's very hard for them to understand the cultural significance and the position of the Lord and all that. But you go out into the country where the farm folks are, the position of the Lord, his control, that's very easy for them. Right? Does that make sense? And other personal elements are very easy for them. Why? Because they're in an environment that develops the finer brain tissue. Though they don't necessarily know how to use it, but they have it. Like that. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories, and workshops develop demoniac propensities in the working class. Right? So the point is, they're like dungeons. You know, we talk about the free world, right? You know, because before in the Dark Ages, all the dungeons and all that. Now we're free, but all they've done is just put more windows in the dungeons. That's all. The vested interest, right? Because actually, if you think about it, glass is cheaper. You understand?
Than bars?
No, than a wall. You know, I mean, so stone walls are expensive, you know, so glass is cheap. So they're not putting in the glass because, you know, they care about you. It's just cheaper. Right? The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class. And consequently, there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization. Yeah, I think he ends the purport with a dungeon of demons. Because that's what happens, because it develops all these bad qualities, you know. And so then, Sutta Goswami continued, upon hearing of Krishna's arrival, Vasudeva, well, the interesting thing is because they want to exploit nature, but they don't actually know how to get the benefit. So that utilizing nature, But then they don't end up with nice gardens and everything like that. They end up with just cement. You know, it's sad. Upon hearing of Krishna's arrival, Vasudeva, Akrura, Ugrasena, and Balaram, as well as Prajumna, Charudeshna, Samba, and other sons of the Lord, abandoned their engagements of eating, sitting, or resting, and hastened to meet him. Keeping the brahmanas and elephants in front, the Lord's male relatives rode upon their chariots and were accompanied by the sounds of bugles and the chanting of Vedic hymns. So we see here this spontaneous devotional service, but it's done within majesty. That's the uniqueness of Dwarka. Because in Vaikuntha, you know, it's spontaneous devotional service. Of course, there's that element, but it's so confined within the rules that it's not brought out. But if you talk to, let's say, someone who, you know, a real scholar of these Vaikuntha lines, then they'll be able to express this element of spontaneity. It just means that it's out of affection to the Lord that they're doing these things, but what they're doing is always in majesty. Does that make sense? Well, in Vrindavan, it's always in sweetness. Yes?
Marsh, some of the things Shri Prabhupada just said about the arrangement, economic arrangement, the factories.
Yes.
From a very limited, modern perspective, could be seen as kind of a leftist thing, kind of state, kind of almost anti-capitalism. At the same time, of course, he's promoting monarchy, you know. So my question is, how, as devotees, we should kind of move from this very kind of from this limiting polarization left, right, in this country?
That's only because that's how it would be perceived, because the point is, Prabhupada pointed out, is where are the leaders of society living? They're not living in these factories. They're not working in the factories. They live in fabulous places. You know, gardens and open space. You mean, it's like New York. Now, you're not going to get much more, except for, you know, Hong Kong, of course, but much more of a congested place than Manhattan. But where do the rich people live? On either side of the park, Central Park. So that first street on each side, that's where all the really rich people live, so they could look out and see the park. And no one's going to build anything there, so you know it's permanent. You know, they have nice things even in the house, open space, big windows, courtyards, all these different kinds of things. They get up on the top so there's space, because when you're down, you're congested. But if you're in the penthouse, why is the penthouse broke? You think it's because it's up? No, because it's got space. You're paying for the ether. You know? So the whole point is this is just understood. It's just the common person doesn't catch this. Because all of this has been discussing the opulence that's there. So how did that opulence come? So it's not that we're talking about shut down the factories and that and everybody will be poor. We're talking about real wealth, the natural wealth, and all those things. These are actual things of value. You know what I'm saying? The guy's wearing a wool and rayon mixed suit. The guy next to him is wearing a cashmere suit. Which is better? Because the one's natural. And then the guy next to him is wearing a vicuna suit. You know what I'm saying? So this is the whole thing, is the natural. You know? It means the best silk that's made in India that you can't buy is all sold in the West. So then who buys it? They value these things. These are considered more. You know, you want to get the best agaru, you have to get it in the Middle East. Because they value it. You know, all these things that previously India had, just everybody had, now only those in the West that know and are rich, they have it. They're taking advantage of the natural. But they do that at the expense of the working class. So all we're saying is that if the whole environment's more based on the natural environment, then everybody will have, you know, will have facility. You know, because it's said here, is these factories and mills are based on the slaughterhouse. If you don't have the slaughterhouses, they don't have that kind of money to open these things. The whole West It was based on the cowboys, and all they did were herding cows to the slaughterhouse. That's all they did. You take a bunch of cows out, you go out and graze them until they get big, and then you take them back. That's what they did. So much of that wealth and all that came from there. So it's just not brought out how much it is. The Prabhupada's pointing these things out. So it's not a leftist. This is the middle. Left is completely get rid of everything and everybody has nothing. I mean, everybody should be equal, so everybody should have nothing. But we're talking about, everybody should have sufficient. But that will come from the natural. Because it's not mechanical, it's that the earth produces whatever is required. But you behave yourself, you get better, right? If the kid does well, studies, does well in his exams, the mom makes better food. He's just playing around, making trouble, always getting into trouble. She cooks more simple. So that means the earth just produces. There's no sour cream on your potatoes, right? So it's just the you end up with the Scottish oats, right? The earth will produce more, but people aren't behaving right, so she's producing less. And even what's there to make more money, if there's extra production, they destroy it. So it's not all this talk about everybody having sufficient and all that. It's not about that. That's just the advertisement. The advertisement's always nice. You know what I'm saying? The person who's wearing the shirt on the billboard, how many people like that do you see wearing the shirt? The reality is ordinary people are wearing the shirt. The advertisement is it's nice. So not the advertisement is it's all about the people and all this. The reality is that no. The people would benefit if all the milk, all the grains, everything were let out into the market. Then the prices would drop by half or a quarter, a fifth. But then the problem is then they'll get the benefit, but the ones on the top with the vested interest, they don't. So, in other words, who's complaining? Not the guys on the top. It's the guys in the middle that think they're educated and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? That's why they're not actually the big target group. They make themselves out to be, because they're the journalists, they're this, that. They're the ones who hear. They're the loud minority. But the silent majority actually is not leftist. It's not even generally left. They're kind of like a pleasant conservative. If you go around, let's say, America, which is the land of the free and the home of the brave, most people are pretty conservative. You can say no, but they vote for liberal points. Only 40% of the people vote. I know my mom, every year she has to think whether she wants to go and vote, because either one she votes for, they're a write-off. So generally she goes, she decides which one's going to be the least amount of trouble and votes for that one. Right? So it's the difficulty comes up is that this so-called middle class intellectual does not really represent the whole scene. Because one, they don't understand what's going on in the top. Because it's practical and it's conservative. The country is held together because of the practical conservative leadership. Because it's not the president. It's all the generals, everybody else. They run the place. But it sounds good. In college it sounds good. The professor goes up and says so many things. Everybody talks this and that. It sounds really good. But, how many of all those tens of hundreds of thousands, millions actually get in and actually run the place? A few of the best ones, and they're generally nerds. And nerds aren't generally known to be liberal. They're just crazy. They're not liberal. So that's the thing. You may take it that it's not. So that's the difficulty, is they're presenting themselves as the most important group to consider, but they may be educated, they may be vocal, and so you know about them, but they don't represent the society in general. Not if you go around and just go around and see the people. They're not like that. There's an idea that they are, but they're not really the main ones. So one has to, that's why it's the same line as Narad Muni is making to Vyasadeva. It's that Vyasadeva's saying, no, but if we don't, you know, speak in a kind of more politically correct language, we won't catch the mass of people. And Narad Muni makes the point is that you won't catch them anyway. Because when you adjust it so much with the political correctness, nobody actually knows what you're really talking about. So they don't know it's about pure unalloyed devotional service. They don't know that. They just think to be good and pious because you get good benefits from being good and pious, and then they do that. And says, but if you speak the truth, then the discriminating persons, they will catch it. And they're the ones that actually lead society. So then you'll get the maximum influence on society. But you won't influence by influencing necessarily just the general mass. So in other words, the biggest block are the working class. Who controls them are the guys on top. It's the guys in the middle that make the noise. So the reality, the bulk of actual what's going on is on the top and bottom. But the top controls the bottom. So that's where you're going to get your maximum. Now, if you can present it nicely where that middle group catches, great. But even amongst them, it's only a few, because in their liberalism, they're atheists. Because the point is why are the conservatives conservative? Because they have seen that there's, you know, natural laws governing society. It's not about man's laws, it's just natural laws. You do things in a certain way, it always works out that way. You know, you take care of your money, invest it properly, it grows. You don't, it's lost. You know, you train your children properly, they grow up to be, you know, valuable members of the society. You don't, they're lost. They know these things. And so they follow them. And that's why their position has been maintained for sometimes generations. So it's not their own laws, it's their own experience that comes from that's just the way the world works. So their conservatism is based on what actually works. And you can't say, well, you know, that's a nice theory, but in reality, because they're the ones that got the money and power, it is working. And the ones that come up with these ideologies, where's their power? Where's their base? What do they got? Even they create a little revolution. Then after the revolution, who cares? Where is Robespierre? E.B. Day. By the same people he utilized to start the revolution. That's the whole thing is, where are these? Where are they? So who is making it happen? So that's the thing, is that this idea, no, you have to catch this class. No, it's a different class. If you want to target, you know, or you want to talk broad, the broad is actually a different class. But it's not that group being intellectual, they don't have influence. But their influence is so slow. You know, now it's like kind of like you could say in the last 10 years, organic and things in the store, it's normal, common stuff now. But that yelling and screaming about it, organic, started in the 60s. So that's how long it takes. It takes 50 years. Then it becomes normal. And why? Because the guys on the top figured out how to make money from it. You know, that's why you have supermarkets. Because that liberal guy, when we were kids, is that, yes, you had an organic shop. It was a house that somebody converted the ground floor into a supermarket. So you just had stuff laying around. And then all the hippies would come and buy the stuff, and they lived upstairs. You know? You know, so it wasn't a big money-making thing, you know, like that. But now you got supermarkets of organic. I mean, exclusively organic, at least. Isn't that general everywhere? It's just
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Just, you know. So it's one has to see that there's an importance to the political correctness, but political correctness as a main driving force is about 30 years old. It's old. Who's talking about it? The young guys, they just live that. They don't talk about it. They just do it. You know, so one has to know is that here you're just speaking truth, and in an age where everyone wants the truth, this is the truth. And if they're going to get caught up in words, you know, how many politically incorrect words would there be in any classic?
In any?
Classic. Literary classic. There's always going to be something. You know? But that's just the social speech of the time. Like I was just thinking this morning, it struck me as this one, I'm not sure where it came from, but this older person, just before they died, they turned to the person next to them and said, "It would please me if you would hold my hand." No, but I'm just saying, the point is that they started off with the result. "I would become pleased if you would hold my hand." How would someone say it nowadays? "Would you hold my hand?" It would, you know, we'd start with that or start with something else. "I'm feeling bad. Can you hold?" No, they just start. So you knew what you were doing, knew what your goal was, knew it. And then there's the work to get it. This, the result, this is the result, this is the work to get it. Just so much more direct, so much more, you know. So this so-called modern thing, this all it is clouding the truth in the name of truth. See, because technically the point is you say it in a diplomatic way. Diplomatic means according to the particular audience. That's just normal etiquette. But you can't use those terms. And the funny thing is it's just a matter of time before politically correct is considered an archaic term. Because it's political correctness. That means political. That's politics. That's you know, that's all that cheating, lying, diplomacy, you know, who's going to be in charge. That's what it is. It's just that you're saying it like that. You know, it's just like previously you would say someone who was mentally challenged was a retard or retarded. That was the politically correct term. Because retarded just meant not so, it's not so fast. Its movement is slowed down, so they're retarded. Now it's considered really bad.
Challenged.
You know, so it's just that if you say the guy's black, that's cool. If you say he's a Negro, that's not Negro. Just means black. It's just the so you can say black in one language, but not in another language. You know, how does this work? So the whole thing is just people choose. You know, is she a woman or is she a lady? You know, at different times it means different things. At some point, woman meant the common, you know. Female on the street, and lady was the upper class, and at other times the lady was the one on the street and the woman was the upper class. It's just that's the problem with it. So seeing it in this way that it's left, it's we have to be very, very careful. It's just a matter of, yes, to the particular audience you're speaking to, use words and use examples that they can relate to. But there's no such thing as that the presentation is that. That's just that's what's called aropia. We put our conditioning on it. So then they'll say, this is weak, this is that. Oh, no one will accept this. Hey, people are joining all the time. And they're accepting it, and they're intelligent people. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about, the intelligent people won't take these things the way you are. Chopati's in a direct opposition to that. There's 7,000 professionals who are making more money than anybody who's complaining that no one would like the purport. And there's thousands of them. And there's a good chance at least 50% of them are women.
They are what?
Women, 50%. You know, so it's not a problem. The point is those who are actually professional, they understand real and practical. Right? That's the thing. They can catch it. You know. Unless of course they have the Asura Baba. You know, that's professional to extreme there, you know, or Mayaya Pratigyana. So there's about that. But the general group, they're pious. They believe in God. They believe in the laws of God. Just they don't know about pure devotion. That's a, does that work or?
Or is it, it would take a, does it take confidence then? Because Srila Prabhupada used to speak against the demons and about kicking on the face of Mayavadis. Would it take confidence then to speak in that way and on the Bhagavatam?
Because that's the way it is. People like that. Someone's confident. Somebody's, you know, got it, has a consistent, you know, how you say, practically applied ideology. People appreciate it. They like consistency means it's secure.
Yes.
So if it's consistent, then you know it's secure. If it's changing with the wind, yeah. who can put, you can't put your faith in it because it doesn't give security. You know, and as we said, no security, you can't sleep. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Continue and then come up with something or something now or okay. So in other words, there's the facts and then there's how you present the facts. But the point is the facts don't change. So you have to discern between those who are complaining about the language but actually they're complaining about the principle being talked about and those who are complaining about the language that you'd use. But this is the Shastra. When you speak, you use different. You know, it's just like the Bible's there, the priest is there, he's giving the sermon. He's not talking in, you know, King George English. He reads a passage and then he puts it into the language of those who are there. And if he's out in a rural community, he'll speak in one way, he's in the cities another way. If he's in this country, he'll talk one way, in that country he'll talk another way. But you don't change the source, the authority, because people's language and view changes, because that's always changing. Just even 6 months, something's out. You know, that you know, sometimes devotees get on this thing of something, but it's so old. It's really old. I mean, I'll talk to young people about this kind of stuff, and never, you know, and it's always so hard. You know, you ever talk to goths? Oh, it means, you know, the heavier it is, the happier they are. You know, straight edge is like that. You know, everything about it was all yelling and screaming. You know, and they follow the four regular principles. These were karmis. So it's kind of like the whole, it was a small group, and I kind of think the whole scene became devotees. You know, that's why they're called hardcore. You know, because they were. They all got tattoos, shaved heads. You know, I mean, you know, I know I'm talking about the girls. You know, and then, you know, the guys. You know. They're a tough bunch, you know, and heavier it is, the more straight it is. Yeah, you know, like that. So all these things are just passing phases that just, you know, are carried on. Because, you know, so that's the whole thing is that, yes, you have to deal with all the variety of groups, but there's the demographics in a society are way wider than this one so-called, you know, kind of, you know, pleasantly liberal educated class. They're one out of 9 or 10 groups, and they're the smallest. They actually are. If you look it up in statistics, they're a small group. Important group, but a small group. So this idea that they represent the world is wrong, because they're the smallest group. Right? That their thinking and work on ideologies and all that, that makes them more important. But as far as their thinking, well, everybody thinks like that, that they're basically speaking 100% wrong. In their group, yes, most will think like that. But then as you get into the idea, they'll each fight over this and say exactly what it means. You know, how green is green, right? As they sit on their computers, you know, in a hired, you know, place on, you know, how you say, 32nd Avenue in New York, and then they're fighting for green. Why aren't they out in the country? It's half an hour. You're out in the sticks. You're out in the forest. Why aren't they out there? They're not out there. You know? Like that. How many vegans run a cow protection program? Go ahead, knock me out. I don't know of one. I've never heard of any. They all sit in the city. Vegans are guys in the city and complain about how cows aren't being treated. And no vegan is going out in the country and taking care of cows.
They'd have to drink the milk then.
Yeah, then they'd have to drink the milk. Because it's more about not drinking the milk than about that they care about the cows. You know what I'm saying? So this is the whole problem. So we take these things, which are important, but it's like, what are they doing about it? Why should we worry about them? You know, they don't like the vegetarian stuff, then, you know, we have stuff that doesn't, doll doesn't have anything. I mean, just, you know, they eat something else. Like that, you know. You know, bread is there, it's got oil in it, right? You know, and then eat it without the butter, you know. If the Italians do it, they put olive oil. Okay, they're doing okay, so it can't be all bad. So, you know what I'm saying? It's these things that we make these into, you know, prominent issues, but they're not issues, they're passing phases. You know? But what Prabhupada's speaking, if you look at, he's speaking it, but if you look at when you see Vishwanath, what he says, or Baladev, you're going back hundreds of years, they're saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're all saying the same thing. So that's the thing. And if you look on the materialistic side, they've always been saying the same thing too. There's never been any difference. The so-called liberals, they've all been there before. It's the liberals who killed Socrates. You know, the lawyers, the judges, the professionals, they killed Socrates. Because he's talking about absolute truth, and their thing is, no, there can't be an absolute truth, because there's an absolute truth, then actually we have to be conservative and follow God's laws. But if there's no absolute truth, then we make the laws. In other words, liberal is about who's God. Because if they care about the individual, great, but what law are you going to apply to the individual? It's got to be a standard law, but it's not. It changes. So that's the difficulty. Liberals aren't actually liberal. They're just conservative in a different way. They're conservative in a way opposing to the conservatives. Because they do not have any liberal view towards the conservatives. So they're not actually liberal. Otherwise, they would embrace what the conservatives are saying. And then apply that to the individual. Real liberal, that's the way the Vaishnavs, that's broad-minded. Because they have a conservative platform that they are able to apply to each individual. That goes back to your position before. This broad-minded can apply it to the individual. The conservatives can't. And the liberals can't. Because every individual will be different. It's whimsical. Who gets what reaction? It's, you don't know. It's not based on individuality. It's based on whim, you know, and political correctness. So that's the difficulty. None of these are pure. So the conservatives that they have standards, that's very good. It's stable. It's steady. You always see is when there's a liberal government in charge for a while, then things don't get done. And then what happens? What's the next thing? Conservatives go in, but when they go in, it's not that they just sweep by. It's like landslide. Right? And then, you know, it goes back the other way. And then it goes back. So it always goes back to the conservative because it's stable, it's solid. They're always saying the same thing. So that gives people confidence. But their weakness is they can't apply it to the individual. That's where the liberals are strong, that they are worried about the individual. That's important. But they don't have any standards by which to apply it to them. Because it has to be the opposite of that. It's material, it's duality, it's not reality. So all it is the Vedic is taking the conservative elements and applying it to each individual so it matches their position. That's the real broad mind. That can accommodate both. Both are able to appreciate. But due to ignorance, then we'll say the Vedic is actually the worst. No, it's the only reality. That's the weakness, is that, you know. And then how to present this nicely, it's just a matter of wording. It is true, yes, it's wording, but not because of political correctness. It's not that the political correctness is the platform. It's you use political correctness. See, there's a difference. It means the people that function in that world, they use political correctness. There's no such thing as a lifestyle of political correctness. That's what we take up. That's what's so weird. You know what I mean? These hardcore, you know, how you say, people that get things done, they use political correctness to get things done. They don't use it as an ideology. It's a tool. You know, that's the reality, yes.
But in the same way, we can use political incorrectness to get interest.
Yeah, I mean, people do that all the time. It's just like when you want to do something, you throw it out. They want to get something, you just throw it out there, and everybody wants to know about it. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just, I think it's a common thing when they're going to have a fight, you know, like one of these boxing matches, a big fight. Then the first thing they start putting out is that each one, what they got to say about the other. You know, they do all these different things to guide me, that everybody's taking opinions, getting all that, and then, you know, it's a way to do it. You want it the opposite. That's what Prabhupada says, good or bad, it doesn't matter. In the end, it all becomes good. Because at least they want to know who you are. Nowadays, you go to any place, and nobody's ever heard of Hare Krishna. It's like, no, that can't be good. You know? Like that.
Is it more or less like faded into non-existence because of the creature?
It means they faded into fitting into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Means the whole point is one is known because of uniqueness.
Yes.
But everybody's looking for uniqueness, and so if we have uniqueness, right? So it's already, you know, so it's just it's. It doesn't make sense. You know. It's just you have to know how to present it to the particular group you're talking to. You know. We met the other day. I was here when the devotee came from Sweden. There was that, you know, famous politically incorrect lecture of Prabhupada in Sweden on the four on Varnashram, but instead of saying, you know, intellectuals, you know, administrative, he said first class man, second class man. He did it on purpose because that just gets them, you know, going. You know. And then, you know, won them over at the end. Well, what kind of, you know, so what class man are you? He said, I'm fifth class, servant of the others. So now they can say nothing. And from that whole crowd, that whole, you know, lecture, one person joined. Like that. So he came here the other day. You know. He mentioned that, you know, I'm that person. So it's. Yeah, because the whole point is that's preaching. There's no such thing as hard preaching or soft preaching. There's preaching. Hard preaching means you're not applying it to the audience. Soft preaching means you're applying to the audience but not giving the substance. You know, the hard is you're giving the substance but not applying it to them. So it's like the conservatives and liberals. They each have something, but they're missing the point. Preaching means you're giving the substance to the audience. That's real preaching. So that you see all the acharyas do that.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, Sama Veta Bhakti Vidindaki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.